Well, hey, everyone. Welcome to this week's show. I'm your host, Lisa Anderson. We are in June, which is my favorite month of the year, not just because it's my birthday, okay, I'm just saying, but because the days are long, it's the start of summer, you can get berries very cheap at the store, and a number of other reasons. So, and also because I'm just pleased to be here with you, because we love our boundless people. Yay. Later on in the show, we're going to be talking to Candace. Yay, we love Candace too. And she's answering a question from a guy who met a girl online, but they're kind of long distance, and he felt that the first date went well, and he's wondering, okay, how do I remain in contact with her while we wait to set a date to meet again. So Candace is going to help him navigate those waters. And then for our culture segment, we have Susan Mathis, an author, in our studio here to talk about her book that she wrote with her husband called Countdown for Couples, which is really marriage prep. And she's going to talk about how you can prepare for marriage even if you are not dating anyone, and gives us some great insider tips on how to go about doing that. And here we are for our roundtable. This is kind of, you know, June. We often think about marriage during June. It's a big marriage month, okay? Although I think some people are going more non-traditional these days. It seems that there are more people just getting married in weird months that you wouldn't expect. So, but June is kind of that traditional one that everyone thinks of. If any of you go to the nail salon, you know you cannot even get in there because so many people are getting their nails done. I'm just saying, even men nowadays. Okay, that's just a side note. I'm just talking about that. Okay. But for our roundtable, we've got a great group of folks here. I have Michael, Mike, and Shannon at the table. Hey, guys.
Hey. Hello.
Thank you for joining us today. You, believe it or not, are here because of an email that we received from one of our listeners. She wanted to know, she basically says she's in conversations with friends who talk about how difficult marriage is, and they've just been hearing all these things about, oh, marriage is so tough, and they see marriages breaking up kind of in their acquaintance, whether ones that are just, you know, new ones, you know, people that have been married not so long, and even marriages that are breaking up after years. And she wants just us to cast a vision for how we can still love being married and cast a good vision for marriage, not necessarily an easy one. Marriage isn't easy, and if you've stuck it out over the long haul, you probably have navigated some bumps, and I know that you all have, but to just talk about how is it possible into this day and age in our culture to have a marriage that goes the distance, even with all the challenges that are there. So these three folks have done exactly that, and we have got a great range, I think, of marriage and experiences, as well as time represented here, 21 years, 34 years, and 19 years, respectively. So I think that's definitely some good collective experience. So the first question I want to ask y'all as we kind of start talking is, when you, back before you were married, or as you were thinking of getting married, what was the vision of marriage that you were given? What was the script that you were told? What was in your head? Was it kind of the marriage is the ball and chain? Oh my goodness, you're going to lose your freedom. What does this look like? Blah, blah, blah. Or were there people rooting around you to say, oh no, marriage is a good thing. You should go for it. You should, I mean, kind of going into marriage, what was the vision that you had of it and kind of the feel for it? Were you afraid? Were you excited? What did that look like?
I was just thinking about that as you was asking the question, and I guess my perception of marriage was really based on my parents' relationship, and we never really talked about it, but their relationship was just, it seemed to me, watching it growing up, was just a friendship partnership. Mm. I mean, they discussed everything, they managed the six of us, the children, together. It wasn't assigned tasks and that kind of thing. And it just made me think, as I got older and was starting to think about a long-term serious relationship for myself, that if I could model it after anything, that's what I would want. Hmm. Unfortunately, because we didn't talk about it a whole lot, there were aspects of marriage once I got married that I didn't anticipate and had to work through as the years went by.
Mm-hmm. I think in my situation, I met my husband in high school, actually. So we were high school sweethearts. So we've known each other for a long time. Mm-hmm. I got a little bit of both sides of that. I saw from my own family, we were both raised in Christian homes, but my parents were both from, had backgrounds, they had been divorced. And there was a little bit of a negative outlook on that. Mm-hmm. My husband's family, on the other hand, were married at age 16, I believe, and just solid as rocks. And I saw the other side of that as well. So I think I got a mixture of that from family and friends as well, mm-hmm. Going into it. You know, some trepidation and also some encouragement. So it was a little mixture there
yeah.
for me.
Yeah. How about you, Mike? Mm-hmm.
I'd have to probably agree a little bit on the Michael side. My parents have been married forever, and so seeing that model, it's like, wow, I really want that. Now coming into it, you know, very quickly, you learn about life, because my wife kind of came from the opposite. Her mom was married like six times, and everything. So fortunately, we had a great church group that, and we were very involved with our church at the time. So we had a very large community all standing behind us, giving us all sorts of advice, some mm-hmm. of it good, some of it interesting. Mm-hmm. I think we get everything from, oh, don't let the sun go down on your anger, to license your truck in your dad's name because you never know what might happen. So, yeah.
So that's what they told her, right?
Oh, no. Yeah. Okay. Well, we did live close to Idaho.
Okay.
Coming into it, it was, you know, there was a lot of expectations, but, mm-hmm. you know, we did have a lot of support, which I think was key in the early days.
Yeah. So that kind of, you're alluding a little bit, Mike, to my next question, which is, did you guys go into marriage with a game plan? I mean, I think that a couple generations ago, even, it was just like everyone got married and just, you know, you just assume that your community is going to be around you supporting you. But now it's like, if you're going to be married, you better have like 12 marriage conferences lined up. You better have read like 15 books. I mean, you can't even work at Focus on the Family without being like, this is a major project and a community project. You know, so did you guys have a game plan, or did you kind of just let marriage happen and see kind of how the relationship and struggles panned out along the way?
I think in my case, not much of a game plan, really.
Mm-hmm. Well, you were in high school.
Hopeful, yeah.
And actually, who has a game plan for anything in high school?
That's true. I should probably clarify. Yeah. We met when I was 15. We were married when I was 23, so there was quite a span there where I got to know the family and all. But even at that, I had high hopes, and I had model of my husband's parents as they were married, you know, to look at, but still, you know, just not knowing what the future held, I don't think I had much of a real plan going.
Mm-hmm. So. And that's kind of indicative of younger marriage, because you have the opportunity mm-hmm. to grow together and mature together mm-hmm. and kind of form, you know, more so than we see a lot of people marrying in their 30s. And then it's like, you know, bam, bam, you know, oh no,
yeah.
I am who I am and you better fit that.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, that's interesting.
Yeah.
With us, we were just really busy. I mean, we're, you know, we had our professional jobs, but then we were, you know, like I said earlier, we're very involved with our church. So, and we got to, you know, co-lay minister, is that a word? Or
not sure, but let's go with it.
Yeah, you know, so my wife was kind of like one of the primary worship leaders at our church.
Okay.
It was a fairly big church in the area, and, you know, I was on the music team. And so there was a lot of just, you know, you hear about people getting involved with people at work or whatever. And so, you know, we kind of just had that because, you know, we'd go and get our jobs done, but then it was ministry after that. Mm. And then, of course, when kids came along, then that kind of shifted. And, you know, for the past 16 years now, it's been, okay, pay the bills, but then we'll focus on our family,
mm-hmm.
quotes. Mm-hmm. But I think that's probably been the core with us, is really, you know, my wife came across something. I don't know if she came up with it or whatever, but, you know, that our kids are the only thing we get to take to heaven. Mm-hmm. So we really just kind of focused on, okay, you know, we've got two boys. And so it's like, you know, the four of us, this is it. We're living life together. And yeah, there's been rough patches and stuff that you never see. And, you know, we all say in our marriage vows, you know, for richer or poorer, sickness, health, mm-hmm. death do us part. We haven't experienced the death part of it, but I think probably all of us have been through, you know, mm-hmm. different parts of that.
Pretty much the other.
Where it's like, you know, I'd really like some more of the, you know, maybe the richer and the health stuff and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, just living life and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, growing up, again, my parents were the example, and I was one of six kids, five of which were boys, and I was next to youngest, so I kind of watched everybody else get married. Mm. And so I saw that pattern, but I didn't realize it until later, having been married for a number of years, that really I think the direction I took was I was a romantic and I was looking for that life partner. And so I, you know, I dated a fair amount, but I didn't get married finally until I was 28 years old. So I was more mature, kind of ready to settle down. And as Mike said, with the vows, even though I wasn't a regular church attender or a quote-unquote religious person at that time, I took what I said very seriously, and mm-hmm. I figured this was it. And I didn't actually come to a personal relationship with the Lord until 20 years later. Hmm. So we weren't actively involved in the church and those aspects of the church that might be more encouraging to a long-term, permanent, monogamous relationship kind of thing. But and so we struggled in some aspects. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, we waited 5 years until we started having kids, so we got to know each other a little bit better and had some foundational stuff that helped us later when we did hit some of those valley times. But I just think I always wanted a long-term single partner relationship. Mm-hmm. And that's why. Mm-hmm. So I guess what I'm saying is I was just stubborn.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and that's interesting because you're talking about, you know, getting through a stretch of marriage without the Lord, which a lot of people will just say, oh, that's not even possible. You know, but you're saying mm-hmm. that you did, you know, you had that in your head that you wanted a marriage that lasted, mm-hmm. which I want to ask you all, you know, was there, I mean, obviously you've gone the distance and now you do have the Lord in your life and all that. Was there a time, talk about time or times, when you wondered if your marriage was going to make it? I mean, where, when you hit a rough patch and you were kind of like, okay, this wasn't expecting this. Need to figure out how to navigate this. How did you get through that?
Well, we've had several rough patches in 34 years, almost 35 years. And there were times that we did separate and were living apart and those kinds of things, trying to work through what the differences were and the impact it was having on our relationship. And as I said, I came to a personal relationship with the Lord later, but a lot of the time I did spend on my knees praying mm-hmm. because I just didn't know the answers. Mm-hmm. And fortunately, through some guidance I got from some friends, I did seek counseling and that kind of thing. And we went through all of that. It wasn't spiritual church-related counseling until later, but mm-hmm. You've got to look at sources of help and wisdom outside yourself. And obviously one of those sources is God, but there are people that know a lot about the struggles of relationships that can help you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you see a lot in the comedy TV programs these days where they make a big joke about the commitment. And it may be a bad word to some people, but at the end of the day, if you're not committed, it doesn't make any difference how much of the rest of the relationship you want. You've got to be able to give more of yourself and give up some things to maintain that commitment if what you really want is that long-term relationship. And in my experience, the rewards coming out the other side of the valley times, the tough times, the rewards are well worth it.
Mm-hmm. In my case, I think there have been definitely ups and downs throughout the almost 22 years that we've been married. But we kind of grew up together, as you were saying, you know, mm-hmm. we've known each other since we were 15, 16. There seems to be, to me, even looking at my friends that I graduated with from high school and stuff, there seems to be something about that 20-year mark or somewhere around there where things just get really rough. Mm. And in our case, I think it was just more of a reassessment. It seems the longer we're married, the more I see we're so very different. Mm. you know, I just thought, oh, we're just, you know, completely in unity about everything, you know, for a few years. And the more we're around each other, the more it's like, no, our senses of humor are very different. Our views on things, some, you know, even political things are very different. The way we approach parenting sometimes is very different. And I think that was everything started to kind of come to a head around that 20-year mark. When it came to children,
because oh, wonderful.
I'm just speaking for myself here.
Yeah,
what I've observed, you know, just like on Facebook and things going on in people's marriages. Yeah. In our case, we waited a while to have kids too. So we have a son now who's 14 and a daughter who's 6. Mm-hmm. And that parenting thing can really throw you for a loop. Mm-hmm. And I think all of that just kind of, you know, like I said, boiled up at about the 20-year mark. Mm-hmm. Nothing terribly devastating. It was just a time of kind of reflection and, you know, are we on the same page here and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So that's just speaking for me. There's mm-hmm. something about that and seeing my friends on Facebook, marriages just, you know, breaking apart at that time, you know, yeah. long-term marriages.
Well, they say statistically so many divorces happen in those first 8 years. And then it's like if you can mm-hmm. make it past the 20, 25-year mark, that's kind of the next mm-hmm. hurdle of just mm-hmm. where a lot of marriages stagnate. You see the ones that have put in the work and you see the ones that haven't. And a lot of people start coasting. And so yeah. I totally understand that. Yeah. Mike, how about you? What have you seen?
I hate to take kind of a pragmatic stance of it, but I just always kind of have looked at it. It's like, okay, in these rough times, but how bad is it? I mean, it's like our lives aren't being threatened by each other. We're, you know, there's no illegal activities going on, no illicit activities. So we can probably work through this. Mm-hmm. And so we look at all the, like, you know, a few years back when Tom Cruise is jumping up on Oprah's couch about, Katie Holmes is it and everything. Yeah. And, you know, I think the mass public view was, oh, isn't that sweet? Oh, he's truly in love. Oh, he's, you know, and of course, I remember watching that, or I don't watch Oprah, but my wife brought it up and showed it. And so, not that she watches either. Yeah, we saw it on a Yahoo thing. Okay, about that. So
just research. It's just research.
And we just remember thinking, it's like, okay, that there, you know, and we've done a little study along the way just because you pick up stuff about psychology and brain chemistry and mm-hmm. various things as, you know, as you have kids, especially and stuff. And it seemed more textbook psychology that, you know, they say in the first segment of time in a relationship, there's some brain damage that goes on and just keeps you enamored with this person. And so we were just like, well, that's probably what that is. You know, hope they make it, but mm-hmm. we'll see. And well, you can see what's going on now. So, mm-hmm. so I guess just kind of looking at it, it's like, well, you know, nothing bad, that bad has happened to really end this. Mm-hmm. Now, I think it was a little, you know, and I think having the foundation of seeing what my parents had, because I know that, you know, they had issues because, I mean, my dad's Italian, so, you know, he'll, you know, he'll speak before he thinks sometimes mm-hmm. and everything, mm-hmm. but, you know exactly where he's at mm-hmm. on stuff. And so, and my mom's the exact opposite, so she's more reserved and everything. So I'm sure there were many more conflicts that went on that me and my brothers never saw, mm-hmm. but they were able to make it through all of that. And so it's like, okay, I have this bearing or this standard that I look at. It's like, okay, they were able to make it, and I know they're not perfect, and I'd like to think I'm a better person than my dad because, you know, he raised us arrogant that way. So you know, so my wife, I think, probably had a little more difficulty just because, you know, she grew up with the, you know, okay, who's dad this month mm-hmm. sort of thing. And, mm-hmm. You know, I think the relationships sort of stabilized a little bit after, mm-hmm. You know, as she got a little older and everything. But, you know, it's more of just, you know, how bad is this? And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, can we live through this? Mm-hmm. And, you know, Dave Ramsey talked about one time about, you know, when you're looking at your financial situation and, you know, people are like, oh, well, do we call a credit counseling company or do we file bankruptcy or do we sell our house? Do we whatever? And he boils it down to what's the worst thing that can happen? And could you live through that? Mm-hmm. And if you can, mm-hmm. go ahead. So
interesting.
It's not fun.
Right. But, yeah.
You know.
Well, let's turn a corner a little bit because I think a lot of our listeners would love to know, you know, looking back on the many years of marriage that you guys have under your belt, what is the best thing about marriage that you never would have anticipated? Like, what would you say is just, wow, this is such a good thing? And it's something that an unexpected blessing in marriage that has really, really changed you in some sense.
Well, looking at the amount of time, I think we've come to know each other because of the amount of years that we've been together, and things that may have been annoying as far as personality traits early on, you start to get to know the person better and understand how all those traits is what come together to make that person who they are. Mm-hmm. And there are times that it's not mind reading or anything, but we can actually anticipate things that we could do that the other person would really enjoy or appreciate. And you start to get to the point where you almost do it automatically. You don't really have to think about it. Mm. And so they're not just, you know, for me, for my wife, it's not just Mother's Day or birthdays or anniversary kind of thing. It's like something, you see something either at a store or an event that she might enjoy, that kind of thing. And it's just because you come to know each other so well, you start to instinctively do those things for each other. Mm-hmm. And some of it can be as simple as, you know, the dishes are still in the sink. You know, she's not home yet. I'm going to go ahead and clean all this up because I know she'd appreciate that, because she's thinking when she gets home, she's still going to have to do it. Mm-hmm. And so it's the small things. It's not, I'm trying not to focus on those things that are traditionally considered gender role kind of things, like mm-hmm. the dishes and cleaning and all that kind of stuff, because I've done a fair amount of that. But it's just how you think about what the other person would appreciate or enjoy. And there's nothing that makes me happier than to see my wife's face light up because I've done something a little extra to mm-hmm. make her day easier or take some kind of pressure off of her or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And with the longevity that we've experienced, there have been some health incidences. She is a breast cancer survivor. So there were plenty of opportunities during that trial period that I could do above and beyond just to make her life a little bit easier. Hmm. You know, and they're just small things.
Yeah.
And that's where you start to think as much, and in hopefully some cases more, about the other person than you think about yourself. Mm-hmm. Long-term marriage is being unselfish.
Mm-hmm. I'd say exactly what Michael said. I think that
I bet you can't recite it word for word.
No way.
Can you play that back?
But just the ability to get inside that other person's head is just fascinating to me after a long period of time, even after, like I was saying, noticing the differences, mm-hmm. you know, differences in personality and differences in, you know, outlook. Being able to know what that person's probably thinking or what their opinion is on this or that, that kind of thing, and being able to complement one another. You know, like where one has perhaps a weakness in one area, one can bolster that. Mm-hmm. It really is true, mm-hmm. and it's really a neat thing. Mm-hmm. So
that's cool.
I'd have to say, at least in this stage of our life, parenting probably is the biggest joy for us, because like I said, we have two teenagers, and they are both very different, both in stature and ability. I mean, one's a jock and plays football, and he's just huge. The other one is more average size, but he's very creative and artsy and everything. And so, and just seeing the characteristics of, like, oh, okay, he gets that from my oldest son. He has a very similar sense of humor for me. So it almost, you know, at the dinner table, Mom will say something, and before I have a chance to get it out, he's saying it. Sometimes it's like, you know, maybe that probably wasn't the best thing to say, although that's really funny and everything. Nice. But that's probably the biggest joy right now. Now, granted, we realize that in 4 to 8 years, those guys are, you know, hopefully moving out on there. And so,
don't hold your breath.
Yeah.
Start praying.
Exactly. Yeah. So, kind of that anticipation of, you know, how is life going to look as we move into that, you know, not so much, you know, 20 to 25 year mm-hmm. time frame, you know, years being married, but mm-hmm. Okay, now we're empty nesters. Mm-hmm. And I do see some glimmers of hope where, you know, we just, we'll go out on a date, and just because we get so busy with life and, you know, taking people to this and getting this done and volunteering for this, and that we, you know, just sitting down and having coffee or, you know, pizza or something, mm-hmm. and realizing, gosh, she's a really cool person to hang out with. Mm-hmm. And I think she thinks the same thing. Mm-hmm. But, you know, and so just realize it's like, okay, there is some stuff still there and everything, and you know, mm-hmm. so probably maybe we should make more time for this. But
that's cool.
That's the trick.
So what would you get? Last quickly question as we mm-hmm. wrap up, because you're talking to people that most of whom aren't at marriage yet, you know, and so mm-hmm. they're wondering, okay, what they don't have even have a vision really for how this may be able to work. If you were going to create a poster that people, you know, engaged people, young marrieds can hang in their room or whatever, and it's going to say, you know, top 10 ways to keep your marriage together with God's help, what needs to be on that poster?
I think
pray.
You need pray. Yeah. That's the top.
Keep God
of the list
in it.
Right there. Yeah. I think you just need to be sure that when you're looking for a future spouse, that you're looking for someone who shares your core commitment, your core values. It doesn't mean that person has to think exactly the way you do or act or do the same things you do. Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, mm-hmm. when you get down to that core, that they share your faith and your commitment mm-hmm. To things and your dedication.
That's good.
So,
and I think the connection with that, or the other piece of that, is make sure you give yourself enough time to get to know the other person. Mm-hmm. You know, don't rush into anything. That knowledge can be gained at different rates of speed, but if you go into the relationship with an initial impression, there's some things that over time and allowing yourself to be with each other in a lot of different circumstances, a lot of different environments, mm-hmm. will bring out things in each other's character that you won't initially see, mm-hmm. and will either confirm the complementary nature of your personalities, or will go, wait a minute, there's a red flag. I don't know if this is a long-term situation or not, because it's just different. It doesn't have to be something bad. It's mm-hmm. just something that's not the way that you were looking for in another individual. So give yourself time mm-hmm. to know each other.
Okay.
But on the flip side of that too, one of the things that we were told when it comes to either, you know, getting married, kids, and a variety of things, you'll never be able to afford it. You'll never have mm-hmm. enough time
sure.
for it.
Mm-hmm.
But do it anyways, because mm-hmm. it's just yeah. awesome. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, the whole ducks in a row thing is never
exactly. You could be 50
if you wait, you'll never do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And doing that and really seeking wise counsel, mm-hmm. you know, which I guess that's overarching of that too, mm-hmm. is you know, get a core group of people that you trust and that you can, you know, either seek individually or as a couple. Mm-hmm. You know, we identified a couple different, you know, couples that were advanced in years. I guess we would be those couples now.
Yeesh, yeah. But they were like 40.
Yeah. They, you know, they were old and
yeah.
You know, so, but and just use those resources that are out there and get it from a variety of different things, because not everybody is perfect, and what works for some couples mm-hmm. doesn't work for others.
Mm-hmm. Well, good thoughts, you guys. Thank you so
you're
much
not.
For, I mean,
you're
we
welcome.
We appreciate you. I mean, you're exactly, Mike, what you just said is what you guys are. Couples that have walked the road, that are still in it, that have fought for your marriages, and that are loving marriage in the midst of it all. And that's what single young adults need to see. So those of you out there that have heard this, go find these people. Not these people in this room. Don't go like accost them. They can't talk to all of you. But people in your own churches, in your own families, in your own communities, find these people, get them in your life, and figure out how they're going to help you walk this journey when it comes about. So thank you all for being part of this.
Thanks.